should be set out that intentionally setting fire to forest land would be arson in the second degree.
Look, you got intentionally setting fire to forest land or intentionally damaging any property if that places a person in danger of bodily injury. All right? What happens if Bob Chandler goes up and sets my 2,000 acre field of wheat on fire and it doesn't put anybody in danger of bodily injury? Wouldn't be second degree arson, would it?
Well, yes.
How do you say?
Well, because I'd be recklessly placing well, no, it's not a building.
There's no building. I live in Portland, and there's nobody within 5 miles habitation, but this 2,000 acres of wheat in the first month of August is probably worth, what?
$16,000,
$20,000. So, well, of course, he could take it under reckless burning, and also that would be covered under criminal mischief, that kind of damage, criminal mischief.
Perhaps. Well, under reckless burning, now I'd have to light a match and go out and do it. I couldn't just throw a cigarette out of the car.
Unless I could show that you intentionally.
It would seem to me, and this is again, it's a purely question of policy and how you view it, but obviously the most serious offense is when you start a fire recklessly, knowing that it will cause death or bodily harm to somebody.
That's the historical rationale behind arson, isn't it? The protection of human life.
Yeah. So the next most serious would be just intentionally damaging somebody. Or collecting insurance or something of this
sort. Is why Judge John just raised the question, in both Section 3 and 4, this damage to property must be accompanied by some recognition of bodily injury to somebody. It would seem to me like the damage to property in and of itself should be an offense, and maybe both of those should be in second degree and then third degree or first degree. Include where you have some idea that the person is maybe harmed.
Well, what Don's trying to do, if I see this thing correctly, is to divide it not on degree of harm likely to be caused, but on the intent and recklessness of the doer.
No.
To some extent.
What I've tried to do is to certainly draw a distinction between the type of arson that's likely to, either likely to or does result in injury to somebody or damage to the kind of property that has been looked upon traditionally as a type of property that the burning of which amounts to arson.
Now, we see here, any other property than forest land, in order to be guilty of second degree, requires that you must have some recognition that people are involved. And it would seem to me like that should not be necessary.
No. Of course, the growth of arson, through the common law, arson was, in terms of a dwelling, that's where it all started, of course, was the burning of a dwelling house. And it wasn't until the states got into statutory arson and things like the model arson law and this type of thing that started getting into other types of property. Now, what the model penal code is trying to do and what New York Commission and some of these others are trying to do is to look upon the most serious type of arson as that which is going to injure somebody or burn a dwelling house or a type of property that's been thought of as a dwelling house or a building as we've described here. And not to try to cover every type of property and make the burning of every type of property necessarily arson.
Well,
That's why you have your extensive provisions and your criminal mischief statutes to pick up some of the, even though it amounts to burning, that it's not called arson because of the type of property that's burned or because that it doesn't result either in the risk or the actual injury to somebody or the burning of a dwelling house or a building.
I think we've got one thing to remember, of course, and that is that got to be pretty careful not to just raise bogeys for people who are going to I can see that I can see the counsel from the Forest Service are even hooping through this thing and coming to ours and say it doesn't cover people who just recklessly set fire to forest lands, and not going back and looking up the criminal mischief statute, and then come roaring down the legislature and say this is no good because, or the Council for the Pendleton Grain Growers or somebody else doing the same thing. We've talked about this before in other connections, and I realize that
you run into this problem when you try to consolidate a number of statutes and combine them within a few sections.
We talked about the same thing in connection with Russell, for example.
The criminal mischief, now I wonder, I'm a lot of things, but I'm not a constitutional lawyer like our senior senator, so I'll defer to the others present. But do we run into any type of constitutional problem between a set of facts, which might be applicable either to the criminal mischief section or the arson section? In other words, does it give the district attorney my rangeland, I've got 1,000 acres of grassland that can Powell Butte, and somebody burns it. District attorney is faced with the question of proceeding against the defendant either by means of a criminal mischief prosecution or an arson prosecution. Would there be a possible, I'm not sure whether it's perky would be the right principle, but would there be a possible constitutional problem to investigate that on?
Yeah.
Because our criminal mischief statute, I have to think, is an excellent statute. Maybe it covers the ghost that I raised about the wheat fire. I don't know.
Well, you've got to have intent to cause substantial inconvenience.
Well, one form of it. That's just the tampering.
Well, or if he recklessly damages property of another, intentionally damages property of another, or recklessly damages property of another in an amount exceeding $100. So if you go through my wheat field and are half drunk and throw out a cigar, light a cigar. Lost this to be within the scope of that.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
I would look long,
right? DA says, okay, I'm going to charge you with reckless, with criminal mischief in the second degree. Defense attorney says, you should have charged him with reckless burning. There's an ambiguity.
Not really, but in other words, you think that the defendant would be heard to complain because he wasn't charged with a more serious offense?
Well, if he didn't have a great reckless burning, it might be a more might be a less serious offense.
Well, of course, it's different. I don't anticipate there will be, but
reckless burning, arson in second degree, in theory anyway, match criminal mischief in second degree.
So
criminal mischief, the forest fire guy brought, or the wheat field guy brought up under criminal mischief in the second degree instead of arson in the second degree.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go on.
Under criminal mischief, you'd have the element of the amount of damage.
Yeah. The damage proof would control and intent would disappear.
All right. Let's go ahead. I have one other question. I'll just mention it now, and you touch on it with the DNRs in the first degree. I wonder, since the rationale is for the protection of human life, why in arson in the first degree do you only make it apply to possibility of bodily injury if, in the case of insurance, it occurred to me that in any event, if the act places another in danger of bodily injury, that should be arson in the first degree.
It's broader, I think, isn't it?
Well, now, first degree, of course, you compare sub 2 of section 4 with sub 3 of section, or sub 2 of section 3. And in section 3, we're talking about the placing of another danger or danger of damaging a building. Whereas in the highest degree of the crime, we're talking about actual injury or actual damage plus the added element cause of the insurance. And
I started a fire, killed John, but I didn't do it for insurance. Well, that's arson in second degree. If I did it for insurance, but
of course, if you kill him, you might get into felony murder too. I would assume
yeah.
You would.
Yeah. All right, but I just burned him pretty badly. But to become arson in the first degree, I'd have to have done it for the purpose of collecting insurance.
Yes. First degree, yes.
This may be a moot question because more than likely it will have been in a building. And so despite the fact that you burned me, your act by fall was in the proscription of sub 1.
Yeah, sure. If it falls under a building, yeah, if he intentionally sets fire to the building of another,
What if I'm asleep in the back seat of my car, and Bob Chandler doesn't like me and sets my car on fire? Not in a building, he didn't do it for insurance.
We might be in a building under our definition of building.
This is our toughest day today, poor Dad.
Yeah,
but it's not adapted.
But it's not. You don't have a pillow on it.
Well, but
actually,
well, now we have supplied quite a lot of material here, and I apologize, it was not too soon. Because I think that a reading of this material would certainly be advantageous before we start discussing these sections. But
I accept the spanking, and I deserve it.
And I do too.
But
let's go.
Can I just make this comment that I did go through a good bit of this, and I suppose that I have a feeling on some of this than others, but I have a abhorrence to this idea of saying, well, this was the common law, so we can't deviate from that. Well, at the time the so-called common law would be adopted, you didn't have the risks involved in fires that we have now. You didn't have campers and people riding motorbikes around through the forests and the woods. You didn't have people driving down the roads throwing out burning cigarettes or cigars.
Yeah, or equipped with 15 gallons of high test gasoline.
Right. So it seems to me like the mere fact that common law there was these distinctions and ideas and so on just doesn't make sense today. And that I agree that it depends on how you view this idea of burning down somebody else's property or harming somebody else's person by fire. And it would seem to me like that under our present circumstances, that this should be a significant crime, and one that you do not have to be burdened with a lot of common law distinctions and so forth as to how you're going to prove it and what you're going to do, because if I say, for instance, the use of this word intentionally in here, plus recklessly, I don't know how you'd ever prove that. I think a judge could throw you out on almost any kind of a case.
I think let's discuss it just for a few minutes, go around in line with what you're raising, because believe me, this I'm somewhat bothered. And then we'll take a little break and come back, and Don can go through the commentary, and we can hit again. I wonder this. First of all, Kathleen, you've been noticeably quiet today.
Thanks for change.
What's your thought, generally?
I must confess, I did do my homework during the material, and I wasn't thinking of these distinctions so much in terms of reflecting or not reflecting the common law, but somehow it kind of bothered me when I got down to that last one, and the fact that you intentionally set a fire and recklessly caused damage to a person, and the only reason that it becomes the aggravated offense that I consider to be right then and there is because insurance is involved, bothered me as a social judgment, I think, though, rather than a legal one, Don. And at that point, I think, is when I went back and started to look at the other ones, and I've been bothered somewhat the same way the justice is by this reckless and intentional kind of thing. And I got awfully confused, as a matter of fact, Don, between 2 and 3 on trying to make sure whether one is intentionally starting a fire, the other is intentionally damaging, you know, trying to clarify which situation fits which kind of circumstance, you know, given the situation of my father who periodically manages to set his field on fire and have to call the fire department, whether he's managed to be recklessly burning or is committing arson in the second degree when he burned the neighbor's cherry trees.
Well,
so I have trouble just in the factual application of it, but the other thing is, I say the social judgment that is implied in a couple of these bothers me. But this is not a drafting question, this is a question of policy.
It's a policy
committee
question.
Right.
Well, sure, and that, we've got to decide those questions, too. There's on your hypothetical about your father, of course, arson in the second degree, we say he intentionally damages. And it seemed to me
you don't know my father.
Pretty outrageous, too. I mean, if he had a fire that accidentally started the fire on his neighbor's property, you would say he intentionally damaged the property. Maybe he intentionally started the fire on his own property, but...
Well, no, but what I meant was that what bothered me, you get the intentionally modifying, sometimes the fire, sometimes the damage, recklessly, sometimes the fire, sometimes the damage, and it makes, I think, a little hard to focus on the exact fact situation to which these things are applicable. That it's kind of like those pictures you look at, and when you blink, you know, you see a different picture that causes that concern.
Bob, what do you think?
I'm a policy. I'm looking at I think we've eliminated class of crimes that are now covered in ORS 2648 because of the recklessly, or not because of the recklessly, but because of the intentionally, which are the two general classes that you and I have been talking about. The land fires that either cherished or more valuable property. I just don't think that we're ready to say that we're getting back to clear back to the mischief altogether. I think it'll create a problem for us with various groups.
Well, my thought was and has been, in anticipation of this meeting, that this section here that we're dealing with today is going to be probably the most fiercely lobbied section of the entire criminal code, because we don't only have law enforcement people, but we've got the forestry associations, we've got the cattlemen, we've got the various units of government like the state forester, we've got the Association of Oregon Counties, we've got the insurance industry, and they're going to...
And you've got the field burners who don't want to be caught.
That's right. I can see Senator Bateson and his Marion County constituency on field burning. I'm wondering this. I looked at the Model Penal Code with respect to what they did with arson and one or two of these other states. But in Oregon, we're in a much, much different historical context as far as arson as it relates to property is concerned than maybe the drafters of the Model Penal Code were. I think we have this prairie and range and wheat fire problem, and it occurs to me that if we could somehow or other maybe get closer, this is my own thought, and I don't by any means want to say that it's final and that I want to not listen to what we do decide to do or later go through it. But if we stay a little bit more closer to our present form of arson, we can say to these people, well, look, we're recodifying to a greater or lesser extent what we've had on the books in Oregon for 50 years and, or 100 years, and it's worked. Why are you rounding skeletons in the closet? Number two point. I'm wondering if I, as a defense attorney, in a case where my client was charged with burning somebody's wheat field under the criminal mischief statute, couldn't argue there's a whole separate section relating to arson. This doesn't even apply here. This was there's an allegation that it was an intentional burning that comes under the arson section, and the Criminal Law Revision Commission didn't make provision for this type of offense in the arson section. It no longer constitutes a crime under Oregon law. And if I couldn't maybe induce some judge to throw out an indictment for intentional burning that was framed under the criminal mischief section. Just a thought.
Most of the new statutes involving forested lands and grasslands, covered wheat, cultivated lands, have been written in the last 3 or 4 years in southern states, particularly Florida and Mississippi and Georgia and Alabama. They might be worth looking at, presumably, in the Supreme Court library.
Well, California, I wonder if they've reached their arson argument.
No, they haven't yet.
They haven't.
Is it possible to put in, for instance, in the criminal mischief statute, an exception clause that would say this, the offenses that would be listed under section 164, whatever this would become, are not included in this, or they're not inclusive, or some kind of an exception clause? Is that a permissible thing to do?
I'm afraid I didn't quite follow.
Oh,
yeah, well, yeah, I know.
John's, in answer to John's problem, which I think is a very valid problem, that you could have either reckless burning or criminal mischief. Is it possible to put in the criminal mischief statute, for instance, a statement that any offense related to arson is not included in this section?
I don't see why not. The problem there might be, getting it down to the exact language.
Well,
I thought of that one.
The problem that you might have on it is group
exception.
Come by next week and saying, well, we don't want it in that either. Let's get us out. Yeah. So we wind up with a series of exceptions.
Do you think there would be a constitutional problem there?
Well, I don't know so much a constitutional problem as it is this. There isn't any doubt that what somebody charged with criminal mischief with this related kind of thing is going to come in and say, well, I don't know which crime you charged me with.
No doubt about it. No. It's going to be
Now, his point may not be well taken, but it's going to be raised. That's.
Well, no, there was a. It seemed to me to be somewhat analogous to someone being charged with the someone being charged with taking and using under our present statutes and complaining that he wasn't prosecuted for grand larceny.
Except taking and using is a lesser included in grand larceny.
We just heard 40 cases last week, about 20 to 25 of which, I guess, something like that, were criminal cases.
And his cases, I suppose.
Beg pardon?
And his cases, I suppose.
Yeah. And if there's any conceivable issue that can be raised in these, it's going to be raised.
Sure, you're right there.
Well, let's take a 5 minute break. We're going to have some coffee. The dog gets dressed. Let's go ahead, though. There you go. We all promised to listen.
I was just telling Mildred that I knew I was going to take my lumps on this section. I'm glad I didn't show you some of the drafts I threw away. But I think maybe before we go ahead, if we could turn over to page 16 under the commentary, I think that some of the background information there, as far as some of the policy questions that have been written into this draft, might help to clarify what I was attempting to do here. And the model penal code, sub 2 on page 16, you point out the model penal code in its commentary with regards to arson legislation today, shows that there are three main categories. Of course, the first, and this is one you'll find in most states, divide arson into 3 degrees according to the type of property that's burned. A special concern for dwellings continues to show in the statutes. The classification of arson of dwellings and related structures is first degree arson. Second degree arson commonly embraces the burning of other buildings and structures and sometimes vehicles. Third degree arson covers burning of any other property. Oregon has basically followed this in our statutory construction that we have now. But we include burnings of public buildings in first degree arson, of course. We continue to do so under our draft. But burning of property of any character to defraud insurers is made punishable by a separate section applicable to one's own property. And the model penal code notes that this scheme is subject to grave criticism. For example, the destruction of a large dam, factory, or public service facility is regarded less seriously than the destruction of a private garage on the grounds of a suburban home. Likewise, it makes little sense to treat the burning of miscellaneous personal property, whether out of malice or to defraud insurers, as a special category of crime apart from risks associated with burnings. And the second type of legislation classifies the offense in relation to the types of property involved, but introduces additional criteria designed to discriminate between burnings which are more or less likely to endanger life. And the third type makes danger the explicit criterion in grading arson. It's especially common to use the criterion of danger to others in defining an offense involving the burning of one's own property. The Swiss and other foreign codes grade property offenses according to whether the offender knowingly endangered life or bodily integrity or the property of another. Now, the model penal code, as you point out here, takes the middle view, grading the offense partly according to the kind of property destroyed or endangered, and partly according to the danger to the person. But it was reluctant to rest entirely on danger to the person in view of the fact that almost any illegal or careless burning endangers life to some extent, as firefighters and onlookers are drawn to the scene. Furthermore, it makes any dangerous burning a second-degree felony. Furthermore, to make it, dangerous burning second-degree felony would be inconsistent with the model penal code proposals reserving felony sanctions for reckless behavior that results in actual serious bodily injury. Now, go ahead and point out, but sections of the model penal code, what they do, but the model penal code approach is really quite a bit different than, and in line with the general directive of the commission that we would pattern our revision along the lines of the model penal code. The model penal code is quite a bit different than the approach taken by the New York code and by Michigan. Now, I think since Michigan is so similar to New York, that it didn't necessarily forced to go through that right now because it has been set out in the commentary hour. But if you'll compare on page 26, the New York version of first degree arson. Or excuse me, that's third degree. I don't want to show you third degree. And you take a look at what would be required for first degree arson under the New York approach. Page 28, yes, the last beginning paragraph. Arson in the first degree states a person is guilty of arson in the first degree when he intentionally damages a building by starting a fire or causing an explosion, and when another person who is not a participant in the crime is present in such a building at the time, and the defendant knows the facts or the circumstances are such as to render the presence of such a person therein a reasonable possibility. Now, as you can see there, from the standpoint of proving first degree arson, you have considerably more proof than you would under the modern penal code approach, which is more akin to the approach we took. And of course, we don't presently require under our arson statute to prove that somebody was in the dwelling. And it seemed to me that, again, this kind of grading where in order to be first degree, you're putting a pretty tough burden on the prosecutor to prove some of these elements. But so what we try to do is, as the model penal code did, and their definition of occupied structure was to include the kind of property that was likely to have people in it, rather than requiring as an element of the crime the actual proof that there was another person in the building at the time of the fire. But we also attempted to grade our degrees of arson partly on the kind of property involved and partly on the danger to other people. And the type of reckless burning, well, under the model penal code, it's called the reckless burning. It's still would be a felony. Of course, the difficulty that we have when we're trying to consider these drafts, and we've had the same difficulty all along, is without the benefit of the grading scheme that we're going throughout the revision, it's difficult to compare arson, for example, with our draft on criminal mischief, when we don't know how these crimes are going to fall into the general category of offenses and how they're going to be punishable. It would certainly facilitate things if we could see that criminal mischief in the first degree was going to be a Class C felony, for example, maximum punishment for which would be 5 years in prison or something like that. But I think that all of these approaches, nonetheless, still recognize that there has to be some distinction made among the different kinds of property that are damaged and the different kinds of property that are endangered. Now, the model penal code, I'm talking about first degree, arson, of course, they introduced this element of insurance as one of the means to commit first degree arson. But I'd like to point out how our draft differs from the model penal code in that respect. Now, under section 220.1, paragraph B, they state in terms of destroying or damaging any property, whether his own or another, to collect insurance. And then they make it an affirmative defense that the no one was recklessly endangered, placed in danger of death or bodily injury, or any other building or occupied structure was placed in danger. And rather than framing it in terms of a defense, our draft is in terms of an element, I think it's an element of proof of the crime, of any property, whether it's if any property would cover not only a building or a dwelling of the defendants, but the burning of any property, his vehicle or some other type of property. And since arson in the first degree would be the most serious type of offense, we require actual injury or damage to make it first degree, and the recklessly endangering of a person or a building of another would fall under arson in the second degree. But arson in the first degree would be committed under sub 1 of section 4 by the burning of a, or the intentional damaging of a building of another without any other element being necessary to prove. But I did want to point out how those, how our draft compared with the model penal code and what the model penal code draftsmen were trying to accomplish when they drafted section 220. And in commenting on the how the common law applies here, I certainly wasn't attempting to marry this thing to the common law, but at the same time to take into consideration what seemed to be legitimate differences and distinctions between the kinds of property that, that we're talking about. We would still consider the burning of a building of another as arson in the first degree, the most serious offense. And that if a defendant with the motive of collecting insurance set fire to his own property, and that did in fact cause damage to a building of another or bodily injury, then that nonetheless would constitute first degree arson. But it seemed to me that to get into the kind of structure that the New York and Michigan people take, although all through their drafts, they talk in terms of buildings rather than property. They talk in terms of damage to a building. But when you get to first degree arson, it was such a departure from what Oregon traditionally has thought of as first degree arson, that is the burning of a dwelling house of another, that I felt that to require the prosecution to prove that there was somebody in the building at the time and that the defendant either knew or should have known requiring too much, but at the same time recognizing that first degree arson would be undoubtedly one of the more serious felonies under our whatever grading system we adopt. I would think that first degree arson would certainly be a major felony, that the reckless endangering of somebody else would, I did not feel in the absence of actual damage or injury should make first-degree arson. This was a judgment on my part that I was trying to incorporate and embody seemed to be good provisions and what we have in our present law that we should retain, but at the same time to update our code and to draw reasonable distinctions between not only the culpability element of the crime, but the nature of the property. And I don't feel that arson in the first degree does as much violence to our what we traditionally think of as first degree arson as first reading might give you to think. And as far as protection of the forest lands, I would assume that, and it was my intent, that forest lands and forest fires would be, the prohibition against them would be better under this approach than they would be under a two-pronged approach such as we have now, where a person could be prosecuted for third-degree arson for setting fire to the forest, or he could be prosecuted under intentional setting of fire to forest lands under Chapter 477. But those are just general comments I did want to make. Now, it would seem to me that since we don't have a forum here today anyway, that just a general discussion of this would be in order. And I think a general discussion of what kind of an approach that we do want to take, whether you agree that the model penal code approach, where they try to combine elements, they try to combine the approach of looking at the kind of property involved as well as the danger to others, is a kind of approach as a policy matter that the Criminal Law Revision Commission wants to take, or whether you feel that one of these other two approaches are better, or whether you think we should take a whole different attack on this thing.
I think it was kind of interesting to note, Don, and I didn't realize it until just now, but Michigan, when they talk about arson, they restrict it simply to buildings.
Yeah.
Now, I think we all agree that we shouldn't limit our consideration of arson or shouldn't make it that narrow. Do they, in a commentary or someplace, pick up these other crimes in their malicious destruction?
Yes, section? Under their criminal mischief provisions, right. And they point out...
And they make specific reference to that.
Yeah, they do. Now, the... And their feeling was, and this is generally what the commentary to the New York Code states too, that what their concern was with prohibiting certain types of conduct. And if they felt that the conduct was going to be amply provided for under another section of the code, whether it was called criminal mischief or something else, that they weren't too concerned with what the label was as long as the conduct was prohibited. And they felt that they wanted to limit arson to the traditional kinds of property that felt to be in need of protection by serious felony statutes. Limit pretty much to buildings.
And it's also interesting that in arson in the first degree in Michigan, they have the same elements as arson in the first degree in New York, the difference being that they're conjunctively set out in New York and disjunctively set out in Michigan. Mm-hmm. So the proof is much harder in New York.
Yeah,
is that right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I am sympathetic to your lessening of the burden of proof the way you've done it. I think, just to start it off, you finished your general observations.
Now, I might, you asked about the commentary in Michigan, draft, now under section 2807, page 215 of the Michigan Code, and they have a note on burning of personal properties. Personal property is not covered in Chapter 28, and that's their arson chapter, unless it is a vehicle or watercraft used for overnight lodging or for the conduct of business. Burning of other personal property is one form of criminal mischief not covered in Chapter 27. So that as you look at their arson in the first degree, it's framed in terms of damage to a building. Arson in the second degree is also damage to a building. And arson in the third degree is reckless damage to a building. Now, if you'll compare, say there, arson in the third degree, and also if you'll compare Article 220 on reckless burning under the Model Penal Code, you'll see that they're talking about recklessly damaging a building. Now, my version really, I felt, provided broader coverage and broader protection, because I, under Section 2, under reckless burning, I framed it in terms of reckless damage to property, which would include property other than just buildings.
If we, as a policy matter, decided to cut it down, restrict it simply to buildings, as Michigan did, and then made a specific reference to other, to damage to, by burning to other property being covered in the malicious mischief section, would render it less susceptible of ambiguity than it would if we put some burning of property in the arson section and then leave some for being covered in the other. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
All right.
Not sure that I think it's desirable, but I would agree with that, yeah.
We have to decide, I suppose, as a policy matter, which way we're going to go.
You'd eliminate the defense problem, the problem of the prosecution raising the defense issue. I tend to look, since the United States Supreme Court has taken away from us the possibility of having a senator in each county over these 7 months, it would be nice if our citizens knew that when somebody set fire to a wheat field or grasslands or forest or something else, if they knew it was arson and not criminal mischief. Which, I'm really looking at the thing, if we take that approach for buildings, you know, that the public palatability of the thing, and not only among those we both agree will be lobbying heavily on the thing, but the average citizen to whom arson has a definite connotation and criminal mischief can be anything from syndicalism to arson, I guess.
It's too bad there isn't some better word than criminal mischief.
And I agree generally with the principle that you'd be better off to label lots of things criminal mischief, get them over in there, so that we've got a substantial continue this thing all the way through. I suspect they'll have a criminal mischief will be the indictment most commonly returned for it.
Incidentally, one of the components of more of the crimes, you know, through the sections of ORS, I haven't made up that list on that one, but every other one has some component of that mischief. It seems to.
Yeah, we have, you'll see that in our latest draft of criminal mischief, of the commentary we've set out. We hope, and there may be others we haven't discovered, but we've set out quite a list of statutes to deal with. Malicious destruction of personal property of another, this type of offense.
I'm gun shy, but I remember the initial report of the old Constitutional Revision Commission 4 or 5 years ago. I remember this legislature stood up on the floor, and the first question was, in the old Constitution, you said that the military should be subordinated to civil power, and you don't say so in the new Constitution. Well, we did say so, but in the one, the first one was Article 1, Section 3, and the second was Article 1, Section 17, and she hadn't read that far. it became a real problem in the case of that particular legislator and her husband, but they said, you fill up strong dislike for the new Constitution, and it was one of the 11 votes that kept whipping us.
Well, you know, in a sense, we have a pyramid effect as we go through these statutes or these drafts, because as we look at our criminal mischief draft that was approved by the subcommittee, in order to understand that, we have to look back to our draft we did on theft of services. Now, theft of services was intended to cover theft of services, obviously. But you see, you look at the kind, some of the statutes that we have on the books now, and some of the statutes that talk in terms of interference with property. You have alternative ways of committing those crimes. You can commit the crime by interfering or by actually stealing the service. So what we did when we drafted theft of services, that picked up part of these statutes, the part that dealt with the actual stealing of the service, but we did not take care of the tampering or meddling interference type of conduct. So then we drafted a section on criminal tampering. And then when we discussed criminal tampering, it was decided, and I think it was a good decision, to look upon criminal tampering not as a separate crime, but as a means of committing criminal mischief. So then we evolved into a draft which incorporated criminal tampering and the malicious injury of property type offenses under one draft, which is now called criminal mischief. So all these things are interrelated, and it's hard to really understand one section without relating to the others.
I may be raising both of them, so I take these things, and then I remember the relative ease with which the insurance code is taken up, where there's considerable lobbying activity. The Uniform Commercial Code, which a number of small merchant groups and so forth were terribly afraid, because all at once something didn't show up that had been a crime forever. It's a reasonable assumption that the legislators are going to look upon this and the work of the committee, the committees on the judiciary particularly, as being an expert product rather than just a willy-nilly rewrite. Then the lobbying would have relatively little effect. The thing I'm afraid of in this thing is that once this thing is done and then goes into committee, or if at that time there's much attempt to do any rewriting, then we're going to be in real trouble.
Oh, sure.
A little bit of rewriting can affect sections clear on down the line, and a change of a word or two in the element is going to just negate all the work you've done in all those sections.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, you know, just beside the point, Bob, but I have frequently thought with respect to this is the difference, for instance, what happened when the code was revised in 1953, and it was adopted in 1953.
The what code?
The Oregon Code.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It started in, what, 50 or 49, something like that. But how easily that went through, in contrast, for instance, to the Constitution. And I've always had the feeling that a good part of it was in the selling job that was done by the code revisers before it ever was touched in the legislature. And it had been so completely explained and so forth to interested groups that if you remember, it was passed with hardly any dissenting vote, just breezed right through at the start of the 53 session. And I have the feeling that the same thing can happen to this. When the time comes, it's going to take the same kind of work that was done with the code revisers to get the interested people to understand what they were doing, how they did it, and why they did it.
The average citizen, of course, looks upon the criminal law as a substitute for the civil law for his benefit. Mm-hmm. He looks upon the statutes involving reckless operation of a motor vehicle as something to punish the guy from whom he can get any money ran into him. He looks upon the criminal statute on burning of a wheat field as a way of getting even with this guy after he finds out that he can't collect $16,000, whatever it is. If unfortunately, they're maybe that's a poor way of saying, but unfortunately, in each section of the legislature, we have a substantial number of shoot from the hip people who hear from one constituent on one thing and charge off, and they're lost to you forever. They're taking a position, and they're told good old Joe back home that they're not going to see him done out and see the lumber company, timber destroyed, or something else. And they've pinned themselves into a position that they can't get out from underneath.
And of course, one other thing that's happened, it happened in New York with their new code. It was adopted in 1965, and then in 1967 it was extensively amended. See, so what we're looking at here now is the amended version of the code.
Did you say New York?
Yes.
That may be a cancellation, too. Well, they couldn't get their constitution
to read.
You know,
they
didn't get the criminal code.
Oh, I know. Fairly badly on the Constitution side, of course.
Well, there have been considerable amendments made here in Illinois code, too, haven't there?
Wisconsin.
Yeah,
Wisconsin. Well, Wisconsin had the...
That's been 15 years since that was...
Yeah. There were early amendments made that way.
Well, I'm sure that any complete revision is going to result in a lot of amendments. The committee nor the commission can think of all the things that 2,500 lawyers working on for 2 years can come up with, and there are going to be some holes in there.
Well, what they certainly do.
Or what the clerk may know. Drafters have done an excellent job of making the thing broad enough so that we don't run into these specific things. At the same time, we've got some specifics by our history and our nature as a largely rural state, great expanses of timbered grasslands, lots of waterways and so forth and so on. You're going to call for perhaps specific crimes that aren't as broad as some of these others.
Yeah, well, I agree. And as I considered these drafts and worked on the arson drafts, it certainly seemed to me that intentionally setting a forest fire should be a serious crime in the state. And in my enthusiasm for that, I suppose I overlooked the same kind of danger and the same considerations involved in burning a big field, for example.
Well, I think you're intentional, Mr. Tower. I think you're intentional, except for the field. Cover the forest thing. Well, intentional thing. I would hate to have somebody successfully raise a defense that just common recklessness causing fires to some of these expansions out here. We had a man caused a fire over in Mallard County here a few years ago. Didn't burn a tree, but ran through 50,000 acres of BLM rangeland.
You know, looking at the present Oregon statute on arson, it's divided into three degrees. First degree arson is the willful and malicious or wanton burning of a dwelling house, any building which is part of, belongs to, or adjoins a dwelling house, and which if burned would imperil the dwelling house. And the third category under first degree arson is any public building. So if you burn a dwelling house, public building, or building adjacent to a dwelling house that would imperil the house, then that's first degree arson punishable by 20 years. And that's the Oregon law presently without respect to bodily injury or without respect to insurance. Now, second degree arson, currently punishable by 10 years, is the willful and malicious or wanton burning of any other type of dwelling house defined by the statute, and that would include your aircraft, your railroad car, whatever. Any other building or structure except the dwelling house and the public building. So I suppose that would be a barn, your car, your airplane, whatever. The third degree arson is the willful and malicious or wanton burning of another's property of any class or character. That, I suppose, could be your rangeland, your peatland,
forest land,
whatever. Then, in a lesser category, we have this four-pronged statute that I recited here, the negligent statute as far as allowing fire to escape, and so on. And then there's an attempt statute, which we're going to effectively do away with because of our general attempt statute. And then we have two separate statutes relating to burning in an effort to secure insurance. That's a 7-year thing. Now, we're making a departure because we're saying that, first of all, if it's any kind of building, a barn or a building house, it's first degree. Secondly, we're saying it's first degree if you burn any kind of property in an effort to obtain insurance, if the burning causes bodily injury. But in doing so, we are not providing a crime for the burning to collect insurance for no bodily injury is caused.
That's right.
Only if it's so good.
Huh?
Yeah, we provide first degree if for insurance it results in damage of a building, but not, or bodily injury to a person.
Right.
But not for any other. Our building definition is pretty broad.
Yeah, and my thought there was that if no other property's damaged and nobody else is hurt, that this could be prosecuted as fraud. This could be prosecuted as theft by deception, for example.
Only if he pushes the claim.
If he pushes the claim, yeah.
So you got a pile of logs down at Brooks Scam, and they set it on fire. Doesn't destroy buildings, and doesn't cause any bodily injury.
And doesn't threaten any damage or bodily injury.
And they don't set the claim, then all they've done is burn up their own logs.
So that it shouldn't be anything.
Why should that be a crime? I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Now, if they file a return claim on the thing, then it becomes
a crime.
Well,
then you got the fraud.
Then you get it into fraud on. But if nobody else's property is endangered or damaged, no one else's bodily integrity is endangered or damaged, you've got, as you say, a situation where the man has burned up his own property and nothing else comes into the picture.
All right, this is a fruitful discussion because that clarifies something in my mind. So we say it's first degree if you intentionally damage a building of another or any property to collect insurance and this act causes bodily injury to a person or damage to a building. That's first degree. All right.
Now I might point out that if you had this situation where you had someone who had the motive to collect insurance and he burned his own property, but he did not cause bodily injury, he could be prosecuted under sub 2 of section 3. You see, you wouldn't have to prove the element of insurance, but you would have the element of burning his own property and a reckless endangering. If you had that element, it could be, and if you didn't have the actual damage, if you had the reckless endangering, you could be prosecuted under your insurance fraud situation for second degree arson.
Me, even though you don't have insurance fraud.
Yeah, this would be a lesser included.
So your log pile out in some isolated location where nothing can hurt you, except your log pile burning up would be one thing. Never, for instance, do a cold burn in the middle row house of a line of row houses where it's in danger to people on both sides or the danger to the neighborhood would be such that it might be considered a reckless endangering. That one might, you might be guilty under your
second degree arson.
Log pile man is not, would not be guilty of anything other than bad judgment.
All right. So we broadened, in effect, our first degree arson rather considerably.
Yes.
Yes,
what?
Because you're not simply restricting it to buildings, and you're bringing in the element of bodily injury and insurance. And then you go to second degree, using the same preamble as you did in the first degree, and you say you're guilty of second degree only if we burn any building or structure except a dwelling house. Now you're guilty of second degree if you burn forest land or any property, and such as places another person in danger of bodily injury or a building of another in danger of damage. So if I set fire to your acreage and it places your house in danger of damage, even though the fire is suppressed before we get to the house, then that's second degree.
You intentionally set fire.
By intentionally doing it. All right. Now, and then we've done away with third degree and skip over to reckless burning. I think maybe we should discuss, when we put actually third degree and second degree, that's what you've done.
Yeah.
Anybody have any thoughts with respect to changing section 2 up here, the reckless burning section, as far as its title is concerned, to third degree? I guess that it wouldn't properly be arson, would it? Maybe reckless burning.
Well, as I indicated in my commentary, I think the stigma of arson should not attach to reckless burning.
Sub 1, of course, is arson under the present definition of arson. Sub 2, of course, is for permitting fire to escape this would be reckless burning.
Well, no, sub 1, you mean sub 1 to section 2 of the arson element?
Yeah. Yeah.
Intentionally starting a fire.
Intentionally starting, you see, becomes, and at least in the general public accepted definition of it, statute or not, that's arson. Permitting something to escape is reckless handling of fire. The only thing that bothers me about it is the intention.
Yeah, and the interpretation everyone has put on that was not what I intended. So I, your objection is well taken, and I think if it's going to cause that much confusion, that word should be removed. I would certainly agree with that.
Well,
if intentional is going to cause that much,
if you remove intentional from the first sub 1 to section 2, then we've brought the thing to cover the 70% of the state which is occupied by grass or sagebrush or forest and no people. Reckless starting a fire and any of these things, subject to prosecution, reckless burning.
We get down to the question of whether or not reckless is defined in any of the cases cited in New York, Michigan, and other new code states, has it?
No, and of course, reckless under New York is defined in the statute. Just as purposely is defined in the Model Penal Code, and the definitions of the two are quite comparable. But
what crime is committed, if you can envision the possibility, and I don't know if I can, but can you have a situation where either intentionally or recklessly you have a fire that fails to damage property but succeeds in damaging life?
Well, this,
that assault by fire, or
damages life?
Causes bodily injury, but manages somehow not to damage property. What crime is that?
They burned bombs up in Brooklyn or Harlem all the time. Guy sleeping in a doorway and they walk up. And of course, it'd be, I suppose it'd be assault.
Or murder. It's not covered or touched by arson itself.
It's the only way you could do it. Mm-hmm. It'd have to be an attempted murder. You'd have to set fire to a person.
Well, I was thinking of the instance where something less than intentional, that is, it may be reckless or accidental, but the injury results to the individual and not to property. Now, maybe you can't envision the fact situation that we're in.
Well, I can envision when I lost a high school classmate. Kid flicked a cigarette butt into a wash tub full of gasoline. They were washing car parts of it. Gasoline caught on fire, and the kid kicked the wash tub over, and it splashed on this kid and killed him.
Damaged the property though, didn't it?
Damaged any property. Couldn't hurt the old pistons lying in there. Fire was hot enough to melt them. Might have wrecked it, I'm sure it wrecked his clothing. But it did kill a kid. And it was reckless. Carelessness.
Well, I suppose then in that kind you come under negligent homicide or manslaughter or
some other way.
I suppose what kind of bothers me about this in reading it is that that isn't covered, and yet maybe, you know, you're saying, well, you're going beyond the arson situation when you insist on or talk about such a fact situation. It's not arson you're talking about, you're talking about something else.
Now, under the model penal code, it would be manslaughter if the person died.
Yeah, and it would be some form of assault if he doesn't, I assume.
Infant manslaughter.
Well, I think the only thing that we've really done in this thing as drafted now is to eliminate careless or reckless or careless damage to property. Not worry about the person thing because we've taken care of that manslaughter or assault or somewhere along this thing. And only to certain classes of property that are very much in the public view here.
Well, you know, you've raised a peripheral question that's concerned me, and that is this. The present Oregon statute says that any person who willfully and maliciously or wantonly sets fire to or burns, or causes to be burned, etc., 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 is guilty of arson. Sets fire to, or burns, or causes to be burned. Now, setting fire, I could set fire to the Hoyt Hotel and be caught in the act and still be guilty of first degree arson before that building burned down or was appreciably burned. I could have a pile of rags in the corner of the basement, throw kerosene on them, set them on fire, be immediately apprehended and have the rags extinguished and not a bit of the building damaged and be guilty of first degree arson. But by the employment of the word damage here, you're contemplating that in that fact situation, I'd only be guilty of attempted arson.
Well, no, I'm not sure I agree with your statement that you would you would be guilty of arson under your hypothetical, under our present statute, unless there was some burning. Don't the cases require some charring of the property before it's arson?
Maybe they honestly don't know.
I don't know.
I'm sure that the cases under our present statute require a charring of the property before it's arson.
Was there any?
Here it is now. Under State versus Elwell, a burning of a building.
Okay.
Well, it starts on page 7 of the commentary. And under the second paragraph, under C, the relationship to existing law, I cite State versus Elwell, and they set out a number of things in that case. But then you look over to page 8, and I refer to the Elwell case again, and that held that a burning of a building is an assault. essential element of the crime of arson. To constitute a burning, there must be an ignition of some part of the building resulting in a perceptible change in its composition. Right. The common law called a charring.
Okay. Yeah, I guess you're right. But was there any reason why you departed from the present nomenclature that we have, other than that the statutes are now drawn in the new codes?
Well, I felt that damage would cover it. That was not a departure from what we require now, that charring would be a damage of the building.
But that just occurred to me when Kathleen mentioned the product, for example.
If I could answer your hypothetical, Kathleen, under the model penal code, your situation couldn't either amount to simple assault, because you can commit simple assault in the model penal code by recklessly causing bodily injury to another, or you can commit aggravated assault if your circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to the value of human life.
Well, I suspect that it covered something.
And in your instance, did the person get killed?
Well, I was thinking.
No, I mean, in your hypothetical, did the person get killed?
I would assume if the person died, that you'd come in there under
felony murder.
Some kind of manslaughter. You said manslaughter or, you know, or murder, depending on.
Yeah, could be a felony murder. There would be intent to start the fire.
All right, yeah, under the mayhem statute, could be felony murder.
Or under the point that it did involve an actual attempted arson, which failed and caught some person rather than damaging any property, wouldn't you? If the arson itself were the felony, you'd catch him under the felony murder through that route, wouldn't you?
Right, and we even have a misdemeanor murder rule that's laying in the back in the bushes in Oregon. I don't know whether it's been used, but we tried once to prosecute some teenagers for misdemeanor murder where they went up and shot the lock off the gate on Large Mountain, and some innocent people drove through the gate, went up, got stranded on the mountain because of the snow, and died of exposure. And misdemeanor to shoot the lock off that gate, and anyway, we never got them indicted, but I researched it. Well, where are we, Mr. Executive Secretary?
We removed the intentional subpoena.
If you wanted to do that,
that took care of all our problems.
So you wanted to read just starting the fire or causing an explosion.
Yeah, if he recklessly damages somebody by starting a fire causing an explosion.
Recklessly damages property.
Of course, yes.
All right, by starting a fire or causing, I think that's it. But now, what about sub 2 vis-a-vis our present statute, which says that it's not enough to permit fire to escape from your land, but you have to permit it to escape without extinguishing it or using every possible effort to do so. Suppose Bob permits it to escape, but he did use every possible effort to stop it from escaping.
Then that wouldn't be reckless, would it?
And a reckless modifies the damage of the property.
You know, it seems to me like that word reckless, a person commits the crime of reckless burning if he recklessly damages. It seems to me like that recklessly ought to be down here where intentionally was, that he recklessly starts a fire, not damages.
Damages is a pure causal relationship between an act and a result. The damage results regardless of motive.
Well, let's strike right.
Well, now wait a minute, though. We're talking about culpability here. And how does he damage it? Does he damage it? Did he have an intent to damage? That's what the distinction I'm trying to draw here. Did he intend to damage the property, or was this a reckless damage?
Well, I would agree with you that that's the distinction you're trying to make, but I still wonder whether or not the modifier isn't a distinction here when you word it intentionally damage.
I think that if we said a person commits the crime of reckless burning if he damages property of another by one, recklessly starting a fire or causing an explosion, then we achieve your objective.
Yeah, but recklessly in front of a many men, too.
Well, what if he intentionally started the fire, though?
Then if he intentionally starts the fire, then it comes under Section 3, Sub 2.
Unfortunately, we have to have another person in danger of bodily injury or ability.
Seems to me that reckless burning is inconsistent with intentional burning.
Well, because he could start a fire intentionally, or he could intentionally cause a fire.
Innocent intent, but
sure.
Reckless lack
of
safeguard.
He says, I want to start this fire. I'm going to burn up this property of mine, this pile of leaves, whatever it is. So he intends to start the fire, but he certainly doesn't intend to damage somebody else's property. But as a result of his intentional starting of this fire, he recklessly damages this property, not intentionally. But it's the degree of culpability here does not come up to an intent to damage the property, but it's a reckless kind of culpability. And that's why I appreciate the fact it's difficult to read these statutes without our definitions of what we're talking about here when we talk about recklessly and intentionally. And that's why I set out these model penal code definitions. Now,
can you still confirm?
Now, we're talking about a material element of an offense, you see, under the model penal code definition of recklessly. A person acts recklessly with respect to a material element of an offense when he consciously disregards a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the material element exists or will result from his conduct. Now, what's the material element here? It's damage. Material element we're talking about in the reckless burning is damage. The risk must be of such a nature and degree that, considering the nature and purpose of the actor's conduct and the circumstances known to him, its disregard involves a gross deviation from the standard of conduct the law-abiding person would observe in the actor's situation. That's the way the model penal code defines recklessly. So we're not talking about recklessly starting a fire. We're talking about,
although in fact it may in some occasions involve
that. But that's immaterial. It's immaterial.
Well, that's why I think the argument about taking the word intentionally out is that it does become immaterial whether it was a reckless starting in the fire or an intentional starting in the fire. He started one, and the result is an untoward damage, perhaps unintended, but stupid or something.
Well, I wonder if Don could premise his argument or use the same argument that he just used with the deletion of intentional from sub 1. I mean, you're talking about the distinctions, you're talking about intentionally starting fire, but assuming that intentional was stricken out completely, still causes the same argument?
Yes, I think so. Because intentionally, as used to modify starting, was not intended as denoting culpability. Reckless does.
Okay, but take the two examples. My father and his field fire, which he doesn't pick always the right day to do. He starts the fire on purpose.
All right.
When it's dry. Okay, and he may cause damage to somebody else's property. But the other example, he goes out into to his field, looks around, surveying his acres, and pitches a cigarette butt into the field. Should he, in that instance, that's why I was saying intentionally, I don't think it really matters how he started the fire. If he started it in a situation where it would follow to a reasonable person that this circumstance and situation is such that it could result in damage, should it matter? And I wonder if when you use the word intentionally, you don't differentiate between the two situations.
Well, the reason it was used was, and here again, looking at our criminal mischief, it was felt that the kind of situation that you're talking about, the flicking of the cigarette, would be amply covered by criminal mischief and not under arson. And so we were talking about in terms of the individual who sets out to either start a fire or cause an explosion, not necessarily, and certainly, not only not necessarily, but with no intent to damage anybody's property. But at the same time, if this recklessly damaged property, that it should come under reckless burning rather than under criminal mischief.
I guess I'm wondering whether that distinction is as well taken.
Well, maybe
in terms of culpability.
Yeah, maybe it isn't. And as far as deleting intentionally with respect to starting, I think the fact that it would broaden the coverage is good, and I would agree with that. But I'm going to put up an argument when we start moving recklessly around, because that's a word of culpability, and the material element we're talking about, that when we talk about recklessly, the material element that defines and modifies is damaging.
And not the starting.
Not the starting, no, the damaging of the property.
All right. In your example, the father goes out and burns up his stubble on a dry day and escapes into a neighbor's land and burns up his orchard. That would come under Section 2, either Sub 1 or 2. Your father is driving through the Ochoco National Forest, stops, builds a campfire, leaves it unattended, takes off. That would fall under Section 2, Sub 1. Or if he's driving through Mountain National Forest and throws out a cigarette, that would fall under, ostensibly at least, come under Sub 1. Now, present law, your father's act of burning his stubble field would have to come under probably this section, which says having knowledge of the fire burning on one's own land and failing or neglecting to make every possible effort to extinguish the same. Or probably would fall under willfully or negligently allowing fire to escape from one's own land or land which is in his possession or control. The proof that the state would have to induce to convict your father for burning up his neighbor's cherry orchard would be much stronger than it would under this law. And I'm wondering if there is some merit to that.
Well, that would be kind of my reaction, that there is merit to it.
Yeah.
I understand it's hypothetical for my father, but
permitting is going to require some proof.
No, Bob, under the way we have this drafted, if he burned his stubble field and it escaped to a neighbor's, you wouldn't have to go to Sub 2, because he'd be recklessly damaging property of another by starting a fire under Sub 1.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
But you still got the issue there of the question of recklessness, which would depend on the facts, circumstance, of dryness, wind, water availability, all these things that go to
a jury question.
We don't want to think that when we use reckless that we're talking about negligence. We're not.
No, this is a stronger word.
Yeah.
But I was thinking these are the factors that would go into looking at your reckless. Yeah.
Couldn't you solve the problem and also eliminate the two subsections by saying who damages property of another by using fire in a reckless manner? This covers you've got the damage element, you've got the reckless control of the fire, or setting it at a time when the circumstances render it reckless, where there's a high wind and grass and very dry.
I'll answer that. I've got a fire case against the SPNS, the UP, the Oregon Front Railway for several thousand acres of rangeland on the Deschutes that were burned. I'm able to ask for double damages because the double damage statute makes specific reference to this 164.070. And I was able to allege that
distinguish here. We use using fire, we tie that to the double damage statute, it wouldn't be applicable.
Is the use of the fire
using
case
fire.
Is not this is Sparks, I take it. Okay.
Yeah, it was a spark sale, and the I can see insofar as our civil statutes relating to fires are and you're right to ask for double damages specifically tied to this one here.
No. And these are set out here.
I can see where they're going to get flack from both sides.
Well, if moving the word reckless to modify use raises, but it might raise the question about whether or not, well, for instance, the social utility of a steam engine, which has to use fire as a means of part of propulsion, or the burning of a grass field, there is the use of the fire isn't the problem or where the culpability
no.
is. I mean, it's perfectly legitimate use of fire
right.
for these purposes and a socially valuable one, but the inability to control the result that is causing it, well, the reckless damage rather than the reckless use.
And that's precisely why I feel that recklessly should modify damage.
Instead of use. Well, that's
the suggestion. What's the reckless damage? Particularly when you tie it in with the definition of Montana Code. Because that is a person who does something.
Well, now we're
now,
saying.
Reckless damage. Frankly, I just don't know what reckless damage would be.
Well, we're not saying reckless damage, though, Judge. We're saying recklessly damages.
Well, it's the same thing, but what is it? I don't know what it is.
Well,
it seems to me like it has to be my conduct in recklessly doing something.
Yeah.
And if I recklessly start the fire, then I should be responsible. I don't know just how, what evidence you'd produce, what elements you'd say that you would say he recklessly damages something.
And that goes back, we've got to go back to the definition of recklessness. And the Model Penal Code defines it with respect to a material element of an offense. And the material element of the offense in this case would be the damage of the property.
But you see, once I set the fire, and it does damage, I don't know just where you set in to say it, at what point along the line I start recklessly damaging something.
We now say
there's a problem there. The word, I don't think anybody wants to get rid of the word reckless.
No.
That's got to be the question. Is exactly where
it goes.
Is
where does it start?